Welcome in, sports fans, to this Thursday edition of the Glass Half Full and ESPN Pensacola podcast. I'm your host, Jordan Glass. Thank you so much once again for tuning in. I'm going to be talking some NBA playoffs today. We're also going to be talking some NFL news, maybe a little Deion Sanders, lots to get to. So let's just go ahead and dive into it. And we'll start on the court with the Celtics. They took care of business in a big way last night against the Miami Heat at home, 118-84, the final in that game to clinch the series for Boston. Not the first time we've seen Boston win big this year. It looks like they will wait the winner of Orlando and Cleveland, who they will play game six of that series tonight. If Cleveland wins, Cleveland will advance on to take on the Celtics. If the Orlando Magic can tie it up, they'll have a game seven coming up in a couple of days. Of course, that'll be the deciding game in that series. Looks like Porzingis, you know, we talked about earlier in the week on the show. Would Porzingis being out be an issue for the Celtics? Last night, it didn't seem to be an issue. No Porzingis, no problem. Jaylen Brown, Derek White both go for 25 points. Jason Tatum has 12 big defensive rebounds. So really kind of a team effort. The whole team stepping up there for the Celtics, and they're advancing on now to the next round. And I don't think this is a surprise. I look at the Celtics, and I look at the East and who's left, and I say, who's really a team that is there in a position to challenge Boston as far as winning the East and getting to the NBA Finals? And you look at it, you can say the Knicks, but the problem is the Knicks now are getting a little pressure from Philadelphia in that series. The Knicks win the next game. The series is over, but they open the door for Philly to have an opportunity to win a game at Philly to force a game seven in that series. So who knows what could happen there. You also could say, well, you know, look at Milwaukee. They're the three seed right now. Milwaukee's got their hands full with Indiana. The Pacers, I believe, actually have a 3-2 lead in that series right now. So is there really a team in the East that can challenge the Boston Celtics? I don't think there is. I think you look at Boston right now, and I think they even proved last night with everybody asking, without Porzingis, how are they going to play? I think they proved last night they're going to be a very tough team to beat, whether they have Porzingis or not in that lineup, because again, they do have guys like Jaylen Brown. They've got guys like Derek White and Jason Tatum. So when you got guys like that, you know, you can have a guy like Porzingis miss a game or two because of an injury, and you can really kind of just have your whole team step up and play as a group and a collective unit and not miss a beat and still win 118-84. So I don't think there's really anybody in the East that can compete with the Celtics right now. I don't know if there's anybody left in the NBA playoffs that can compete with the Celtics right now. The Celtics seem to be the hot team right now. I know there's going to be a couple of teams that can probably push them and give them a little bit harder of a series than Miami did. You got to think Boston is the heavy favorite right now to come out of the East and represent the East in the NBA Finals. Like I said, you can make the case for the Knicks. You can make the case for the Bucks. But even those two teams right now, like I said, they've got their handfuls in the series they're in against lower-seeded teams. So Boston seemingly taking care of business there. Moving on now, Dallas in the NHL, or excuse me, not in the NHL. We'll talk about the NHL in Dallas coming up in just a minute. But Dallas in the NBA, they actually force a game six in their series. They take a 3-2 lead in that series against the Clippers. They win 123-93 last night, so a night of blowouts, really, in the NBA last night. Compare that to what we saw on Tuesday night. Tuesday night, we had great games, fantastic close finishes between the 76ers and the Knicks, the Magic and the Cavs. Great games then. Blowouts last night. So hopefully tonight we can get a couple of good games in the NBA playoffs. But Dallas, again, the Mavs take a 3-2 lead in that series with that 123-93 win. Looked like they had Luka playing in the game. Luka Doncic is playing in the game despite an ankle injury, and the guy still goes on to score 35 points. Just absolutely incredible. 20 of those 35 points coming in the second half. They will be back in Dallas for game six of that series tomorrow night. So we'll see if Dallas can close it up at home, or if that'll be yet another series where we could potentially have a game seven in the first round of the NBA playoffs, which is so interesting looking back at this point, because if you look back at the first couple of days of the NBA playoffs, it looked like we were just going to have blowouts and sweeps throughout the first round of the NBA playoffs. Things have kind of settled down now. Teams have kind of really gotten to a rhythm in the postseason. And maybe for some of these younger teams that aren't necessarily used to being in the postseason, like an Orlando Magic, maybe those nerves wore off and they kind of settled down and said, okay, there's nothing different between a playoff game and a regular season game other than it's just in the postseason and that you do have to win the series if you want to advance. So I think some nerves have worn off. They're playing good basketball right now, and we've got some great series because of it. And like I said, this is just another one. We've got the 76ers and the Knicks. That is an interesting matchup coming up as well, especially because the 76ers apparently having to protect their arena from an invasion of Knicks fans because the Knicks have been buying up tickets, trying to make that arena there in Philadelphia their own, their home court. And so we'll see how that plays out. But I believe it was I heard 2,000 something tickets had been bought by Knicks fans to come to that game, and pretty much, I guess, just to see the Knicks close out the series in person. You know, Philly not that far from Manhattan where the Knicks play, so not that far of a trip over. Let's move on now to the NHL, because I did mention the Dallas Stars in the NHL a while ago. The Edmonton Oilers, they close out their series against the LA Kings. They're now going to wait the series winner of Vancouver and Nashville, which right now in that series, Vancouver has a 3-2 lead over the Predators. Dallas, now talking about Dallas in the NHL, they take a 3-2 lead as well. So you got the Dallas Mavericks with a 3-2 lead in their series. The Dallas Stars take a 3-2 lead in their series as well. They take out reigning Stanley Cup champion Vegas Knights in last night's game to take that lead. So they'll be looking to close it out in six. And, of course, Vegas will look to force that game six and potentially game seven in that series. Moving on now to NFL, some things to talk about from the league. Caleb Williams. We've talked about Caleb Williams a couple of different times throughout the week. Obviously, no surprise that he went to Chicago at number one. I think a lot of people saw it coming. Caleb Williams, seeming like it knew it happened. The Chicago Bears seeming like they knew it was going to happen. And apparently his quarterback coach that he had been working with knew it was going to happen. So much so that apparently Caleb Williams for the last month or two has actually been practicing and working on the route concepts that he'll be running in the Chicago Bears offense. While they don't know the exact plays, they have been working on the depth and timing of throws, terminology, things like that, so that when he does get to rookie minicamp, when he does get to OTAs and you know, preseason and all of that stuff, he's kind of already indoctrined into what to expect from that playbook there with the Chicago Bears. And I think this is great news if you're a Bears fan. Really, I mean, honestly and truthfully, the guy, the kid's going to come into camp. The kid's going to come into the preseason already knowing not only the terminology, but when one of your receivers runs a route, he's going to know the timing. He's going to know the depth he's going to be at on his route. He's going to know the timing that he needs to get the ball out on. And it's going to be a big benefit, not only for Caleb Williams, but for the Chicago Bears offense as well. So, you know, you look at things like this. These are the little things that players can do that can, you know, you can look at maybe a 7-win season for Caleb Williams his first year in Chicago, maybe something along those lines. Doing things like this is what can make Chicago a 10, 11, 12-win team and maybe have them into the postseason. Whether that's, you know, depending on how their division plays out, that could be good enough to win them the division, or it could get them a wild card spot. So Chicago made, I think they made the right pick. 110% taking Caleb Williams. They made the right pick because now we're seeing and we're hearing that Caleb Williams for months now, for weeks now, has actually been working on the Chicago Bears offense. So he is ready to go day one. That's the type of player you want in your locker room. That's the type of player you want to take the keys to your franchise, hand them to him and say, treat her well. Because you know he's going to. He's putting in the work already before his name was even officially drafted and called by them. So kudos to Caleb Williams for doing that. Not a lot of players do that, even if they know they're the sure number one overall pick and they know where they're going. Not a lot of players do that. So kudos. I don't know if it was Caleb Williams that wanted to do it. I don't know if it was his quarterback coach that came to him one day with the idea of saying, hey, let's go ahead and start working on this stuff so that way you're prepared. I don't know if it was an agreement, a mutual agreement from both of them. Either way, I think it's a great opportunity there for him to really kind of be ready day one and surprise a lot of people with how he's going to have success inside the NFL. So I'm definitely looking forward to seeing Caleb Williams play in that Chicago Bears offense. Some other NFL news. Stephen Ross, the owner of the Miami Dolphins, turns down an offer to buy his share of the Dolphins. Stephen Ross, majority owner of the Dolphins. There's a couple of other people that are in on it with him, but he has the operating and majority ownership of that franchise. Not only the franchise, but the stadium, the land around the stadium, and a Formula One team, racing team there inside Miami. And there was an offer made to buy all of that, his shares of all of that. It was a $10 billion with a B dollar offer. And he turned it down. Yeah, he bought the team back in 2008. And he said, you know what? It's something that I have grown to cherish, grown to love it, and I want to keep it inside my family. So unless you are related to Stephen Ross and you have aspirations to buy or own the Miami Dolphins, it ain't going to happen anytime soon. I mean, the man turned down $10 billion. He didn't even pay $1 billion for the team when he bought them back in 2008. And he turned down $10 billion for the team, the stadium, the land around the stadium, and his Formula One racing team. Guy wants to keep it all in family. I can respect that. All right, he's going the Dominique Toretto route. It's all about family. And he's going to make sure that that is the case. And he's going to make sure that when he's done and he's ready to step down, or if he owns them all the way up until the day he passes away, whoever takes over after him, it's going to be somebody that is part of his family. So I can't really fault him for that. There's some Dolphin fans that are faulting him for that because they would love to see a new owner in there that maybe could get a new GM in there. Lots of Dolphin fans, not necessarily the biggest Chris Greer fan, don't like the way he goes about things, especially with drafts and things like that. So, you know, when this news came out, a lot of Dolphins fans kind of got a little excited that maybe Stephen Ross might actually accept the deal. He said no, and they're not happy about that. That is for sure. Another controversial call, Major League Baseball last night. Yeah, it happened again. It happened again. This one is a little bit more understandable because the camera angles kind of show one thing, can't really get a clear shot. But basically, in the game between the Cubs and the Mets last night, with the Mets down 1-0, bottom of the ninth, Pete Alonso is on third base, one out, pop fly into left field. It's caught. That's two outs. Pete Alonso tries to tag, come home. There's a play at the plate. He's called out, which made him the third out. Game is over. Chicago wins 1-0. The Mets immediately call for a replay. They go back and they look at it. First and foremost, you got to look at, was the plate being blocked? I say yes. You don't get much more blocking the plate with standing on the plate. I mean, the guy is standing on the plate. So, it doesn't get much more blocking than that right there. So, I think, yes, he was blocking the plate. Was he blocking the plate in a way that's going to hinder the runner from getting to the base? No, because the second part of this is when Pete Alonso's hand goes across home plate. Does it come down and actually touch the plate before the tag is applied? If you watch the replay in slow motion, you will see that his hand skips off the dirt right before it gets to home plate, hovers over home plate, then comes down on top of the plate. So he can still get to the plate even though the catcher's standing on it. The big question here is the attack applied while his hand is still in the air? If it is, then he was out. If his hand somehow made it down onto the bag, onto the plate before that tag was applied, then he should be safe. The game should be tied. They should have kept playing. I think in this situation, we talked about, Monday or Tuesday, talked about Aaron Judge with the blocking the ball so they couldn't turn the double play in that game. This one right here is not as cut and dry as that one to me. You know, this one I look at and I go, okay, there's a lot of okay buts with this. It's like, okay, he is blocking the plate, but there's still room for Pete Alonso to tag it and touch it on his way in trying to be safe. Yes, Pete Alonso's hand does go up, but Does it get back down before the tag is applied? You know, there's a lot of factors here to this that really, honestly and truthfully, they just didn't have enough evidence to overturn. I completely understand why Mets fans would be upset by this. I mean, watching it play out in real time, I said when I first watched it and I saw the replay happen and it was in real time, I said, oh, he's safe. But then as they slow it down, they look at other camera angles, you do see his hand skip up off the dirt and it's in the air. And then as it's coming down, about the same time as it's coming down, the tag is applied. So then you look at it and you go, okay, well, you really got to go frame by frame, millisecond by millisecond to try to figure out which one happened first. And unfortunately, in that situation, the umpires are just not going to do that. They're not. They're not going to do that. They're not going to sit there and slow it down that amount so they can see whether he touched the plate first before the tag was applied. They're going to stick with the call. It's a lot like in football when they say, oh, there's just not enough evidence to overturn the call. That's the same case as what we saw last night at Citi Field. Just not enough evidence to overturn that call. Pete Alonso is out. Mets fans are upset. The Mets are upset. Understandably, it was a close play at the plate. It was a play that ended the game. So, look, I get why you're upset. But at the same time, It just wasn't there. And, look, I'm somebody that is – I'm quick to call out a controversial play, especially if it's involving the umpires in Major League Baseball. Because I told you on Monday, I really do feel like Major League Baseball has a problem with the umpires taking control of games and controlling the outcome of games when they really shouldn't, whether it's bad calls at the plate or bad calls out on the field on first, second, or third. They have a problem with that that they really need to address and work on. So I would be the first to go after an official for making a bad call, especially in Major League Baseball. But I think there just wasn't enough evidence here. Boxing, rare boxing story to talk about. How about some Canelo Alvarez? He was doing some media availability yesterday and got into it with Oscar De La Hoya. Yeah, you remember that name, Hall of Fame boxer. So arguably one of the best to do it in the past and one of the best to do it now. Got into a verbal altercation with each other. A little history between these two. Oscar De La Hoya was actually Canelo's promoter up until 2020. So when Canelo Alvarez decided to come to the United States, start fighting in the United States, Oscar De La Hoya was his promoter for a few years. And then 2020 rolled around. They kind of split up. Some words were exchanged. Some people were saying that Canelo Alvarez needs to put respect on Oscar De La Hoya's name. And they kind of went back and forth. Oscar De La Hoya was basically accused of Canelo Alvarez of, oh, you're just making money off my name, or you just made money off my name. That's the only reason why you wanted me around. And they kind of went back and forth with that. And hearing everything that was said and seeing the situation, I think this boils down to nothing but a couple of egos that got bruised by what each other was saying to the other. And they just, you know, got into a little spat. I don't think, look, we've got Mike Tyson coming back to the ring in June to fight Jake Paul, or is it Logan Paul? One of them. He's fighting one of the Paul brothers, or the Logan brothers, whatever their name is. You know who I'm talking about. He's coming back to fight them. Will we see Oscar De La Hoya back in the ring? No, definitely not. That's not going to happen. I was a big Oscar De La Hoya fan when he was fighting back in like the late 90s and everything like that. So, you know, it'd be great to see. Right. Whenever I would play EA Sports Fight Night, I would use Oscar De La Hoya as one of the fighters that I would choose to fight with. But I don't think he's coming back in the ring anytime soon, especially to square up against somebody like Canelo Alvarez. That's just a bad accident and a bad situation waiting to happen. So if you're hearing this and you're going, oh, Oscar De La Hoya may get tempted back into the ring. No, he's not. It's just a couple of oversized egos that got bruised and turned into an argument in front of media cameras, so that's why it's a bigger deal than it actually should be. Speaking of big deals, or at least somebody that thinks they're a big deal, Deion Sanders, Shador Sanders at Colorado. They're in a little bit of a back and forth right now on X. So if you've not been following this situation, I highly advise you go check it out because this thing has got more drama than Days of Our Lives and General Hospital combined, all right? So it started with Xavier Smith transferring from Colorado, and in doing so, he decides to give an interview with The Athletic. Now, while interviewing with The Athletic, he told them, he said, you know, it was not really a good environment. It was actually pretty toxic. The guy, you know, talking about Coach Prime, Deion Sanders, he said he never really bothered to get to know me. We'll get to that in a minute. He also said he's destroying guys' confidence and beliefs in themselves. And those are both direct quotes from the article of what Xavier Smith said. Well, Shador Sanders, here's somebody in an interview calling out his dad, and he's going to back his dad up. Rightfully so. I don't blame him for doing this at all. So he backs his dad up and posts on X saying, well, he must not have been that good. I don't remember him. So that obviously is going to ignite a big debate and a lot of controversy on X. A couple of people start to snap back at Shador, and then just like Shador's protecting his dad, the dad then protects the son. Deion gets involved, as a matter of fact, with one of Xavier Smith's parents who posted on X about Shador's comments. They said, if this is how you're raising your son, Deion, I'm glad that my son's no longer in the program. Something along those lines. And basically, Deion responded by saying that my son will be a top five pick in the NFL. Where's your son going? LOL, LOL. I got time today. LOL, LOL. Wow. Yeah, I mean, look, Xavier Smith was a guy that his time in Colorado, it's not that he played bad at Colorado. He just couldn't stay healthy at Colorado, right? And sometimes all you need in that situation is just a change of scenery. Go somewhere else for whatever reason. You're not benefiting from the program at Colorado, so you want to enter the transfer portal. I think doing this interview with The Athletic and saying what he said is, I think it's an interesting choice going into the transfer portal, because now, you know, teams are going to look at this interview with The Athletic. They're going to look at that and go, all right, do we really want to go after this player in the portal if that's how he's treating the former team that gave him a D1 opportunity, right? So I think that is going to affect him. But also at the same time to this, if you are a college football player and you are getting recruited right now, pay attention to your coach that you could potentially play for, right? If you're going on a visit to a school, and it does not matter whether it's here in Pensacola at UWF or Gainesville at UF or wherever, Columbus at Ohio State, it doesn't matter where you're going on a recruiting trip. If your recruiting trip has you watching practice, pay attention to how the coaches treat the players, because that is how you will be treated. If you're entering the transfer portal, pay attention to how the coaches are treating the players. That is how you will be treated. If you don't want to be treated that way, don't go to that school. If you don't want the attitude and the arrogance that Deion Sanders brings, and that's not a knock on Deion Sanders, that's just a way to explain how he carries himself. He does carry himself with a sense of arrogance. He knows he's good, and he's going to tell you that he's good. And Shador knows he's good, and he's going to tell you that he's good. And they're going to show you their Rolexes. They're going to show you their cars. They're also going to show you the play to back that up, though. So if you don't want that type of ego, if you don't want that type of arrogance as a head coach, don't go play for that head coach. I'm not saying this is all on Xavier Smith, but you have to understand, you can't expect Deion Sanders not to be Deion Sanders, right? The guy that he shows in front of the camera, it's not an act. It's who he is. Every coach is different, right? Every coach goes about things differently. Billy Napier at Florida is a very calm dude. I mean, I don't think the guy's heart rate gets above 60, right? It doesn't matter the situation. There's a couple of times where he might have lost his cool, but for the most part, Billy Napier is that guy that is just even keel and does not change at all. Nick Saban, when he was at Alabama, was a guy who was fiery. He had emotion. If you did something wrong in practice, he was going to make an example of you and let you know what you did wrong and tell the team what you did wrong. But he is also a guy who's going to help you correct it and help you get better because of that. Deion Sanders, you know what you're getting with Coach Prime from the jump, right? His first team meeting at Colorado, he stands in front of the team and basically tells them, half of y'all aren't good enough to play here under me, so half of y'all are going to enter the transfer portal. I'm bringing my luggage with me, and it's Louie. You remember him saying that to the players in that first team meeting? I'm bringing my luggage with me, and it's Louis. He wasn't actually talking about luggage. He was talking about the players he was bringing from Jackson State. He was talking about players like his son, Shador Sanders, that he was bringing over with him. So don't be surprised when you go to a school like Colorado and you commit to a school like Colorado and a coach like Coach Prime, or you transfer to a school like that. Don't be surprised when you get that type of mentality, right? If you don't want to play for a coach that's going to chew your you-know-what out, don't go play for a Nick Saban-type coach or a Kirby Smart-type coach. If you don't want a coach that's going to pull you off to the side in front of your mama, your daddy, your cousin, your girlfriend, God, and everybody and say, you're trash, get out of my school, get off my football team, enter the transfer portal, don't go play for Coach Prime, because that's exactly what you're going to get. So to do an article in The Athletic and say, well, he didn't bother to get to know me, first of all, he's your head football coach. He's got a lot of kids in that locker room. He doesn't necessarily have to get to know you on a personal level. I guarantee you there are football coaches at the high school level that don't know a lot about every single player in their locker room. You don't have to be buddies with your players to be a good football coach. So he doesn't have to get to know you. Know a little bit about you, sure, but he doesn't have to get to know you and have to be buddy-buddy with you. But then to say, oh, well, he's tearing down the confidence in the beliefs in players. No, he's not. He's tearing it down in you. In you. You think it bothers anybody else on that Colorado roster when he lays into them like he does in his Coach Prime way? Oh, it doesn't. It doesn't. You want to know why? Because they signed up to play for a coach that coaches in that style. They knew what they were getting from the get-go. Whether they committed or transferred in, they knew what they were going to get from Deion Sanders as their head coach. You transferred in, and it kind of seems like you didn't necessarily do your homework on how Deion coaches his team. Because watching any kind of audio or video of him at Jackson State and his first couple of press conferences and team meetings at Colorado, you can find all that stuff on YouTube. Watching that gives you a clear indication of how he coaches his football team. And again, there's no right or wrong way to coach a football team as long as you are getting results. And we will see if they get results this year. I believe they start off the season against North Dakota State, which is, believe it or not, actually going to be a tough game for Colorado, because North Dakota State, when you think of Division III football programs, Division II football programs, North Dakota State is the standard. That's a good football program. They're competing and winning national championships every single year. That's not going to be a cakewalk for Colorado. So we'll see if the results are there for Deion Sanders and the Colorado Buffaloes coming up this regular season when it gets kicked off. But for right now, the coaching style, as long as it yields results in the fall, it doesn't matter how he gets to the job, as long as he's doing the job, right? You can make eggs 12 different ways. As long as you're making eggs, nobody cares how you're doing it. So I think for Xavier Smith, you should have done a little bit more research into the coaching staff you were getting into before you transferred to Colorado. I know it was probably at the time it was like, oh, yeah, man, Coach Prime, everybody's going to Colorado. I'm going to follow. Do a little research. So, again, if you're a high school football player right now or you have a high school football player that's being recruited, have them pay attention to the coaches and how they coach, how they talk, and how they handle their football team, because that is how they're going to be handled if they commit to that school. Plain and simple. Plain and simple. That's all you got to do. Now, as far as anything involving Coach Prime and Shador in this situation, again, like I said a moment ago, you can't blame Coach Prime for being Coach Prime, right? I'm not going to, you know, he's bringing his luggage with him, and it's Louis, right? You know what you're going to get with Coach Prime as your head coach. And as far as Shador, Shador is expected to be a part of the draft class next year for that quarterback class in 2025. This could maybe potentially hurt him, just because it kind of shows that maybe if there's a little bit of a rift in the locker room, he's going to be a guy that could kind of stir the pot a little bit. But ultimately, I think once he, you know, starts playing again, once the ball gets snapped off this August for the season, I don't think anybody's going to remember this situation. I think the scouts are going to see the highlights. They're going to see what he can do between the white lines, and they're going to go, huh, yeah, I actually forgot about that little thing on X with Xavier Smith. And it's really not going to be a non-factor. So I don't really see this playing negatively to Coach Prime. I don't see this playing negatively to Shedeur Sanders. Xavier Smith, I don't really see it playing negatively to him outside of maybe there might be a team inside college football that he could want to transfer to that might look at this and go, okay, are you going to, if I coach you hard, if I coach you tough, are you going to get upset and run and do an interview and enter the transfer portal here? Because there are coaches that coach similarly to what Coach Prime does. And then there's the coaches like Kirby Smart, who are going to be a little bit more like Nick Saban. They're going to chew you out. They're going to yell at you. But then they're going to course correct and show you how to correct things. Again, each coach has their own coaching style. They're all different. They're all like fingerprints. All of our fingerprints are different. Just because they're different doesn't make them wrong. So pay attention if you're Xavier Smith in the transfer portal, where you're going, who that coach is, and how he treats his team. That's all I'm going to say about that. And that's where we're going to leave today's episode. Thank you so much for tuning in, hanging out on this Thursday. I have more Glass Half Full and ESPN Pensacola podcast for you coming up tomorrow.